Marty, will you stop making that noise? Marty, great Scott, will you stop making that noise? I need to tweak the DeLorean. I need to come up with some kind of way of making this go back to the future, Marty. Marty, great Scott, will you please stop making that noise? I can't concentrate. Marty, please. Oh, Marty, great Scott. Marty.
Hello. And today I'd like to talk about being extremely intelligent. And specifically, I'd like to talk about the downside of being extremely intelligent. Now, everyone knows of the positive sides of being extremely intelligent. Intelligence is associated, albeit weakly, with income. It's associated with education. It's associated with altruism. It's associated with abstract thinking. It's associated with believing in democracy. It's associated with low criminality. It's associated with health. It's associated with just about anything that allows you to get on in life. And this is why intelligence is associated with socioeconomic status at about 0.5. Intelligence, cognitive ability, allows you to solve problems and allows you to solve those problems quickly. This is the essence certainly under Darwinian conditions, of getting on in life. Until 1800, until the Industrial Revolution, there was a substantial correlation between how intelligent you were and how many surviving offspring you have. You were being selected for intelligence. Intelligence can be understood in general to be a good thing. There are, however, downsides to intelligence, and that's what I want to look at today, the downsides to intelligence, and in particular downsides to having outlier high intelligence. So these geniuses that you may have heard of, the genius, one of the markers of the genius, the great inventor, the Da Vinci, the Doc from Back to the Future, these kinds of people, one of the markers of these people is they have outlier high intelligence. They are extremely intelligent. Now here, this is brilliant in terms of inventing things, in terms of making things, in terms of solving cognitive problems such as time travel, but it's not so good in terms of getting on in everyday life. And so that's what I want to look at today, i.e. these people will be unhappy. Intelligent, but unhappy. Now, there was a very interesting paper by somebody called Crespi, and what they found, they did a genetic analysis, and what they found is that the alleles that are associated with autism cross over with autism, by the way, is a condition that is characterized by basically blindness to feelings. And we'll look at it in more detail in a minute. But autistics tend to be absolutely focused on systematizing, solving problems, seeing the world in a systematic, logical way. And as a consequence, it seems they are very low in empathy, which sits at the other end of the spectrum. Empathy is the ability to read signals of other people's feelings, to understand other people's feelings, and to be interested in feelings. They are low in that. So it was found that alleles that are associated with autism, i.e. with being low in empathy and high in systematizing, cross over with the alleles that appear to be associated with very, very high IQ indeed. Now, why with very, very high intelligence? Now, why would this be the case? Why would these two things cross over? Well, as I say, the most obvious reason is this divide between systematizing and empathy. If you want to do well in an IQ test, and the IQ test is a measure of intelligence, remember, then you have to be able to think in a very analytic way. You have to be able to think in a highly systematic way. And the ability to do that seems to be at the opposite end of an intellectual spectrum, at the opposite end of which is empathy, the ability to understand people's feelings, to be interested in people's feelings, and to read signals of their feelings from external states. So that's the first reason why you would expect, in general perhaps, very high intelligence, outlier high intelligence, to be negative, to be associated with autism, to be associated with low empathy. The second reason is that part of being able to solve a problem is that you can take in lots of information. You can take in loads of information. The more information you have, the more subtle is your understanding of the problem, the better you can solve a problem. The more you know about a given problem, the better you can see all of the different connections and the way the thing's working, and therefore better solve the problem. The more you have to have more information. It's known that intelligent people do take in more information. For example, it's been found that in resting state, the size of the pupil is larger among people with high IQ than it is among people with low IQ. Why is this? Well, the pupil is the interface between the brain and the world, and so obviously the larger the pupil is, the more information it can take in. So taking in lots of information, this is something that's associated with very high intelligence, but it's also something that's associated with being autistic. People who are autistic will notice little details. details. They will take in lots of information and they will easily become overstimulated. And this will make them hypersensitive to things like noise and smell and touch. I mean, you'll get people who are autistic that can't wear certain fabrics. They will be hypersensitive to external stimuli. This is true of people that are highly intelligent, and you can see how it's true of people who are autistic, and so you can see how the two things would cross over. The next thing that is being very interested in things. Autistics are interested in things rather than people. They don't tend to be particularly... I know a case of an autistic girl, for example, and she's interested in frogs. They tend to have special interests. Her special interest is frogs. She's interested in things, and the thing she's interested in is frogs. That's her special interest. I know a case of another girl who was interested in Victorian England, to the extent that aged 7 or 8, she would dress up exclusively in Victorian clothes and try to eat exclusively Victorian food. Special interest, being interested in things. This is associated with autism, but it's also associated with intelligence, because to have the motivation to solve a problem, a difficult cognitive problem, then you've got to be really interested in these abstract things and not distracted by feelings and emotions and people. So you can see how it crosses over there. And it also means, of course, that autistics have trouble making friends, as perhaps to very intelligent people, because they're not really interested in friends, because friends aren't a thing. Friends are a relationship, an interaction. They're not a thing. So this is a bit of a problem. Thirdly, a problem with autism is literalism. That is to say that if I were to say, "Oh, we'll break a leg," then you'd think I literally mean break a leg. Now this is something that you would expect to be true of people with high cognitive ability as well, because if you have high cognitive ability, you want everything to be precise and logical and analytical. And metaphor is not precise or logical or analytical at all, and so metaphor is confusing. It's not a good thing. It causes problems for the mind. So we don't want that. That's no good. Hard to say how you feel. This is another interesting thing. So hard to articulate how you feel. Well, as people become more intelligent, intelligence can be understood as a sort of pyramid. At the bottom of the pyramid, there are these various abilities that are weakly associated with intelligence, such as the ability to throw a ball, the ability to drive a car, the ability to throw a dart, that kind of thing. As you move up, you have then these three larger intelligence abilities: mathematical ability, spatial ability, and linguistic ability. And as you move up, then finally, these are all underpinned by some people that do well in one of these do well in the others as well, in general. And so these are underpinned by a general ability we call this general factor of intelligence, which is about 0.8 genetic. Now, as people become... The first thing to understand is that the different components of intelligence, linguistic, spatial, and mathematical, are G-loaded to a different extent. They're all markers of intelligence, but people that are very, very good at mathematical ability is, in general, a much better marker of how intelligent you are than being linguistically skilled. And we can all think of the stereotype of the very, very eloquent, verbally skilled person who has a degree in English literature or something, but it's not really very intelligent, and the sort of tongue-tied mathematics student who can't really express himself very well but is extremely intelligent, extremely good at solving problems. Now this is, again, crosses over with autism. People who are autistic, interested in things and systematizing, are often not very good verbally. There are exceptions, but they're often not very good verbally, not very good at expressing their feelings. And this is true, it seems, of people that are of high intelligence as well. Hard to say how you feel. They are able as well, this is to cut through the nonsense that's in front of them. So one of the things that they're not particularly interested in, people who are autistic, is body language. They have trouble reading body language. Why? Well, body language relates to empathy. It relates to external things that don't relate necessarily to solving problems. Well, it's external information. Feelings are external information. There are distractions from the solving of a problem. And so you can see how, again, this would cross over with intelligence and autism. So you have all of these ways in which extremely high outlier intelligence crosses over with autism. Now, autistic people, of course, tend to have trouble in life. They tend to have trouble getting on with people. They tend to have trouble at work. They tend to have trouble getting relationships. They tend to have trouble making friends. And you would expect this to be true of highly intelligent people as well. And returning to mathematical ability, of course, another thing which is the case, is that as you become more intelligent, then your the positive manifold between the different aspects of intelligence that are all underpinned by general intelligence becomes weaker. As your G gets higher, that relationship becomes weaker. Now, what this means is that the extremes of G, the very, very high outlier intelligence, you get the Sheldon Cooper types who have incredibly high intelligence, but they can't do things that are weakly associated with general intelligence. The obvious example with Sheldon is driving a car. He can't drive a car. He relies on Leonard to drive him around. You see this again and again. I think A.J. Eyre, the great philosopher, couldn't drive a car, nor could Einstein. It often seems to be the case that highly intelligent people can't drive cars. It's a practical thing. It's weakly associated with intelligence, but because their G is so high and the manifold between the different aspects of intelligence breaks up at that level of G, there's lots of things that a person of ordinary intelligence could do, but that they can't do. One of them being that. Another one being social skill. Social skill correlates at about 0.3 with IQ, and people who have outlier high intelligence tend to be deficient in social skill as well, which is another thing which crosses over with autism. So you can see all of these ways in which outlier high intelligence crosses over with autism, and it makes it very difficult for you to just get on with ordinary people, to just get on in life. So while intelligence predicts these things, intelligence predicts these socially positive things at about between about 0.3 and 0.5, or even in the case of how well you do at school in your exams, about 0.7. These are only correlations. These aren't a correlation of one. And it means that at the outliers, at the extremes of very, very high intelligence, you can get people that actually do quite badly at school, let's say, because they can't play the game. They're totally focused on the one thing that they're interested in, mathematics or whatever, and they don't care about anything else. A good example of that would be Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton did not do particularly well in school, possibly in part because he wasn't motivated to do the kind of stuff they were learning in school at the time, which was Latin and Greek. What he was interested in was maths. Then equally, he didn't do particularly well at university, and he had to have a second oral exam. In those days, you passed your degree via an oral exam. He had to kind of do it again, which was considered rather shameful because he sort of almost failed the exam the first time, and they wanted to make sure he was clever enough to be awarded a university degree. Of course he was clever enough. He was more than clever enough. He was just, in a sense, lazy. He wasn't interested. He was only interested in doing the aspect of the degree which interested him, and he wasn't interested in doing the other aspects of the degree. And you find this again and again with extremely intelligent people. Francis Crick is another example. He was rejected from Oxford or Cambridge, I think, so he didn't go to the best possible university. There are many, many examples of this, of people that the education system, in a sense, fails them because the education system predicts doing... You do well in the education system if you have normal range intelligence. Then you're geared up to do well in the education system. But if you have outlier high IQ, outlier high intelligence, then you won't necessarily do so well, although you will come to fruition later. So basically, intelligence, very high, outlier high intelligence correlates with autism. To some extent, you could argue that intelligence full stop correlates with autism because a part of it is analytic thinking and this crosses over with autism. But certainly, outlier high intelligence correlates with autism to the extent that it might be considered disabling. Now, another paper by Karpinski et al. Actually looked at members of Mensa, which is the high IQ society. Now, one of the problems with that is not everybody that has outlier high IQ joins Mensa. There's a certain kind of person that's going to join Mensa that's going to identify as highly intelligent and see themselves as highly intelligent and therefore want to take the exam and therefore want to join Mensa. So that's have some caution there. But what she found was that not only does outlier high IQ correlate with autism, it also correlates with anxiety and depression. Now, it seems the reason for this is it's mediated by autism. So outlier high IQ, you have aspects of autism. You have aspects of autism. You can't cope with the world. You don't understand social rules. You don't understand how to deal with people. You lose friendships all the time. Lots of things don't make sense. You become easily overwhelmed. And so consequently, you become anxious and you become depressed. So there is this relationship for that reason between outlier high IQ and being anxious and being depressed. She also found there was a relationship between how outlier high IQ and immune disorders, in particular allergies. Now, why would this be the case? There are two possibilities I can think of. One is that people that have outlier high IQ have mutations which cause them to have outlier high IQ, and therefore they have other mutations as well. And among those mutations would be things like allergies. But I'm not sure that's likely to be the case necessarily, because then she would have found other problems that would be associated with mutation. Another one is simply that if you have outlier high IQ, you have elevated sensory perception. As I said, you take in all this information. You are overwhelmed by all this information. You are hypersensitive to the world around you. You have hyper-awareness. You have intense awareness of everything. Now, if that is associated with being anxious, then what that could potentially lead to is the nocebo effect. The nocebo effect is the opposite of the placebo effect. The placebo effect is when, through psychological mechanisms, you get better physically. The nocebo effect is where, through psychological mechanisms, you can become ill. It's how things like witchcraft work. If you believe that the witch can curse you and you believe it really strongly, then it can kill you because of the nocebo effect. And there may be some evolutionary advantages to the nocebo effect. There's no point going into those here. But anyway, the nocebo effect could possibly explain this. You're absolutely hypersensitive. You think you eat a peanut, you feel this very slight tightening of the throat, which somebody else wouldn't even notice because they're not as hypersensitive as you. Consequently, you start to have an allergic reaction because you think you're having an allergic reaction, and therefore it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. So this is perhaps one possibility there. So not only are they autistic, but they have problems with food and things like this. So just problems in everyday life. So you can now, what this is going to mean as well, another problem is that there's going to be very few people that you can talk to. If you have outlier high IQ, first of all, you're going to have to find people that are going to be tolerant of your quirks and your lack of social skill and your directness and things like this. And there aren't going to be that many people like that. Most people are going to just be the non-player character types who are going to get very upset if you question the current ideology. And the other problem is that you're going to find a lot of people just beneath you and not very bright. And so you're going to have to learn to be tolerant of so that you can get through life of people who just you will just find to be your intellectual inferiors, basically. So this is a real problem. So you can see how people who have outlier high intelligence are to some extent going to have a rotten life because they're going to be autistic, basically. They're going to be anxious, they're going to be depressed, they're going to be hyper aware, they're going to have problems dealing with things, just the little problems of life like noise and smells and changes as well. They like routine precisely because perhaps they become anxious, they like routine, they hate change, but change is going to happen, and so they're going to have an unpleasant time. Now in people who are intelligent even within the normal range, though presumably this is exaggerated among the outlier high IQ, there is also a correlation with openness. What does openness mean? Openness means that you are open to interesting ideas, you are open to new things, you are open to new possibilities. Why does this associate with intelligence? Well, if you are trying to solve a problem and you can be open to all kinds of possible ways of solving that problem, then you are more likely to solve that problem. And the essence of doing well in an IQ test, of course, is solving a particular problem. So they are high in openness, and openness as a personality trait correlates with the IQ at about 0.3. Now, what's that going to mean? It's going to mean that they're going to be open to unusual ways of thinking, to ways of thinking which are taboo, to ways of thinking which an ordinary person would reject out of hand because they would see it to their benefit to do so. So you might expect intelligent people, highly intelligent people, to dabble, to at least be open to looking into and exploring things which ordinary people would think were weird. And they would get socially shunned and they would get themselves into trouble as a consequence of this. A good example is someone like Hans Eysenck. He was very interested in human biological differences and this got him into all kinds of trouble. A lot of people in his position that weren't quite as intelligent and thus lower in openness would think, oh, well, I'll leave that alone. That might get me into trouble in my job. I'll leave that alone. But no, he went and looked at this issue of human biological differences and intelligence and that kind of thing. But there were also other things that he was prepared to look at. He did studies on astrology and whether there was any truth in astrology. There's all kinds of wacky stuff that he looked at. It's a known phenomenon that very highly intelligent people will at least look at the possibility of wacky stuff being true, of out there stuff, of taboo stuff being true. They will be contrarians. They will be pulled towards that which will offend ordinary people, because that's how you solve problems. Always, if you solve an important problem in academia, in science, it will offend against vested interests. It will always do that. There will always be those. Therefore, there will be good reason to not touch these areas. Don't touch the forbidden areas. It will get you into trouble. But if you're low in empathy and don't really care about feelings, and remember this correlates to some extent with outlier high intelligence, then first of all, you don't care about people's feelings. You regard that as a distraction from systematising, which is all important. And secondly, even if you did care about their feelings, you wouldn't be able to properly read or understand what they were. You would be a bit autistic. And so consequently, you'd be perfectly happy to look into these taboo areas or into areas that would make you, people would make you considered strange, such as astrology or whatever. So that's one thing, openness. Another correlate of being intelligent is being trusting, being naive. So why is this? Well, it's probably because intelligence has developed as societies have become more bonded and whatever, and closer bonded into more complex organisations in which it's necessary for trust to be higher. So on this level, you might expect people who are outlier high IQ to, and there's some evidence for this as well, myself and Bruce Charlton look at this in our book, The Genius Famine, you might expect such people to be childlike, to be naive, to be unworldly, and they would need other people who were less intelligent but more kind of streetwise than them to look after them. So you might expect them to be very, very high in trust. Another issue is that people who are intelligence in general, and thus it may also be true to some extent of people of outlier intelligence, seem to be low in what we might call instinct, or being prone to our cognitive biases is another way of putting it. So myself and Dimitri van der Linden have looked at this. Over thousands of years of evolution, we have developed certain cognitive biases, such as a desire to pass on our genes and to want to have children, such as it were, ethnocentrism and a desire to extend our ethnic group, which is an extended genotype, essentially, in wars with other ethnic groups, such as a desire to be religious and believe in God. It seems that this is heritable. It's about 0.4 heritable. You see it in all societies. It's associated with physical and mental health, weakly at about 0.3. It's associated with fertility. It's clearly been selected for. We tend to become more religious at times of stress. We become instinctive, as it were. We become open to our cognitive biases at times of stress. And so this implies it's another thing that's been selected for. I call it an instinct, or you can call it a cognitive bias, whatever you want to call it. So people who are highly intelligent will be low in instinct, essentially. They won't try and solve problems instinctively. They will try and solve problems cognitively, systematically, and this will help them to solve problems. And so consequently, intelligence becomes associated with being low in these instinctive drives. And this means, of course, that what are our instincts? Most people instinctively know how to deal with other people and have social skill and reading facial expressions for emotions and all this thing. Most people instinctively know how to talk to other people. And these kinds of people are not going to instinctively know these things, because this is an autistic thing. They won't instinctively know these empathetic, these instinctive things. They will have to learn these things. They are systematizers. They are not people that are focused on, that are governed by their cognitive biases. So again, it makes it a difficult life, and it makes it difficult for them to live with. One thing that's clear in modern society is that there is a negative correlation between fertility and having children. In men, it's about 0.1. In women, it's about 0.2. And so this means that intelligent people in these kinds of societies, they don't have children. They used to have children in societies which were under harsh Darwinian conditions, in which child mortality was 50%. And the reason that they used to have children was because if you were rich, which being intelligent would predict that you would be, then you'd have children anyway, because there was no contraception, no way of avoiding having children, and you did have some sexual instinct. And fewer of them would die if you were rich and intelligent because of the better conditions you could provide for them. And so consequently, the children of the intelligent survived. Now, once this changed and there was no child mortality and there was contraception, which meant that you didn't have to have children if you didn't want to, then intelligent people who a member would be more focused on things, more focused, less focused on relationships, less focused on empathy, more focused on abstract things, more focused on all this kind of stuff, openness and having interesting life experiences and whatever, would find themselves disinclined to have children and able, intellectually able, to stop having children via contraception. And so large families would become a product of basically of religious people who really want to have children for religious reasons, and of low IQ, because those people are inefficient users of contraception or too impulsive to use contraception. And this is what's happened. And so consequently, intelligence, once a certain level of societal comfort is reached, is negatively associated with having children. Outlier high intelligence, it seems, is almost always negatively associated with having children. If you look at these people who are geniuses, and we look at this in the genius famine, then massively, even under Darwinian conditions, where child mortality is 50%, not 1%, and people are very religious and whatever, they still don't have children. A, because they don't want to have children, and B, because they're not able to form proper relationships with people in order to have children. And so what this makes me think is that the reason perhaps why we've never got to Mars, the reason why we've never engaged in intergalactic space travel or whatever, is that there is an inbuilt aspect of intelligence which means that it can't go beyond a certain level. Because if it goes beyond a certain level, then intelligence is maladaptive. Intelligence is associated with autism, intelligence is associated with allergies, intelligence is associated with being too high in openness and too open to things, intelligence is associated with being very low in exactly the instincts which allow you to survive under Darwinian conditions. And we know that under Darwinian conditions, we're using computer models, the group that is more positively and negatively ethnocentric, i.e. cooperates internally and is lethal externally, that group is more likely to survive under Darwinian conditions, under computer models where they test these different kinds of groups, some which are always cooperative to everybody, some which are cooperative to nobody, some which are only cooperative to the outsider, and so on. It's that group that survives. It's religiousness which predicts fertility as well, and so on, but yet it seems that being outlier high IQ people are autistic, and it is this which mediates them not being religious. People who have a very high IQ tend not to be religious because they are high in autism. And so autism means that you don't see evidence, you don't perceive feelings behind external signals, and therefore you don't perceive a god, i.e. a feeling, a set of feelings behind things in the world. And it seems that that's one of the reasons people believe in God, is because normal people will see evidence, will empathise with the world and see the world not as a thing but as a person, and they will see evidence of God's existence in the nature of the world and so on. But autistics won't see that. They'll just see the world as mechanical. They won't see any evidence of a mind behind the world. They don't see evidence of a mind behind anything, not even behind the signals of a face. So this means that intelligence, although it's a jolly good thing within the normal range, can be a very, very bad and debilitating thing where we're not in the normal range, when we're talking about people that have outlier high intelligence. And the main reason for this is that outlier high intelligence seems to strongly cross over with aspects of autism, and therefore with an inability to be instinctive, with an inability to empathize, and with an inability, and so on. So next time you meet a person who has outlier high intelligence, or you see somebody who has outlier high intelligence, like Dominic Cummings or whatever, being pilloried in the media, you should feel a bit sorry for them. They can't help themselves. They are childlike. They are naive. They are to some degree autistic. And all they're focused on is systematizing. All they're focused on is the truth. And therefore, if someone that has these kind of traits asserts something to be true, no matter how offensive it is, there's a strong likelihood it might well be. Well, thank you very much. And if you've enjoyed this, then please do subscribe. Please subscribe on here and press the red button so you get notifications, because YouTube is, of course, being anti-truth, is trying to crush this channel. You can support me on Subscribestar. You can also support me on another thing in the link, but I won't go on about that because it's Subscribestar that's the one that is pro-free speech. And you can send me an offline super chat. You can also donate that way, because I've been thrown off PayPal for being talking the truth. So please do that if you want to support this channel, the Subscribestar and offline super chat. The links are below. And I will see you soon. And remember, be nice to your highly intelligent friends. And great Scott! Goodbye!